Live from the Sandler Training Studio, this is News Talk 670 KBOI. If you're talking about it,
are you for the criminals or are you for the law-abiding Americans? That's a simple question.
We're talking about it.
If they'll just do what they were voted in to do.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Chris Walton and Paul J. Schneider on the News and Talk of Idaho, 670 KBOI.
Top of the morning, KBOI News Time, 8:39. A lot of interesting things going on today. We got to revisit Orlando for one small part of the program. We're going to talk about the decline of newspapers in the country and $60 billion in Medicare fraud each and every year.
$60 billion?
Billion, with a B.
Are we the only ones not getting any of that?
I think so. One doctor, $375 million in fraud. One guy.
In fraud.
$375. Big M's.
That's rather impressive, actually.
It's a lot. I mean, yeah. We'll talk about that in the next half hour.
What are you in for? I stole $375 million.
All of a sudden, he's running the prison. Yeah. We admire you. Federal authorities in Orlando and around the nation scrambling to connect the dots in the wake of Sunday's massacre. This is Fox. So here they spy an Islamist terrorist with potential charges looming. This is the story right here.
All right.
Potential charges looming for the gunman's wife as early as this morning. Agents are tracing possible ties to radical Muslims in the U.S. and abroad. The all-hands-on-deck probe is aimed at determining whether Omar Mateen acted alone when he gunned down 49 patrons in a gay nightclub, or if others knew of his deadly plans and aided him.
It's kind of interesting because some of the people who are injured, that were shot, that are in the hospital, they're alive.
Yeah.
But they were under the impression that it was more than one guy.
Yeah.
Now, I think in all the confusion, they probably thought that, you know, that can't possibly be just...
Nobody can shoot that much.
Yeah, can't possibly be just a one person shooting.
Well, when I first saw 50 dead, 53 injured, I said, got to be more than one guy. I said that, but not on the air, but I said it.
The first thing I thought of, you remember that nightclub fire in Rhode Island a few years ago?
Right.
I think Great White was playing on stage, and some pyrotechnics set off some streamers that were, up in the ceiling.
Highly flammable.
And the entire place burned down, but everybody tried to get out at once through the one door.
And couldn't,
and 99 people died, and you could see there were bodies stacked in the door that just couldn't squeeze through.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it could have been something like that where, I mean, first of all, there's a stampede of people when something like that happens, as soon as they realize what's happening.
Yeah, and apparently, some of the interviews I've seen with survivors say, I was hiding in the John, and the clip fell out of his gun, and he swore and didn't put it back in right away. Rushed the guy.
Well, and that's kind of strange. I mean, we weren't there, so we don't know the exact situation. Or, how close anyone was. But other people have asked that question. Why did nobody rush the shooter? My guess is nobody wanted to get anywhere near the shooter.
Yeah, well, nobody wanted to be the first one to get shot.
Well, yeah, exactly. But even when he was, bending over and trying to pick up more ammunition, nobody did anything. Well, and I think about it. Would I have rushed the guy, or would I have used that opportunity to try to head out the door? I don't know.
But you think you would have done something. I don't know. I wasn't there.
Some friends of mine, one of them had police training, and there was another one who was in the Army for several years. And both of them said that they're trained to rush the shooter like that.
Yeah.
And they said, maybe you shouldn't if you're not trained to do it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you've ever tackled anyone in your life, that's what you do, right?
Yeah. Federal law enforcement source told FoxNews.com yesterday that prosecutors have convened a grand jury to investigate Mateen's wife. Now, this is not the one who made all the statements before about him being gay.
Yeah,
That was his ex-wife. This is Noor Salman.
Mm-hmm.
She could be charged as an accessory. Apparently, Chris, she knew about it and tried to talk him out of it.
But.
And then when he left, she just went, oh, well.
But she didn't call the authorities.
No. FBI agents have interviewed Mateen's wife In the days since Sunday's massacre, she's reportedly cooperating. Formal charges could help ensure she told the feds all that she knows. Multiple reports said the Rodeo, California home where Salmon grew up was visited by the FBI yesterday. They have, of course, refused comment to the press outside of official media briefings. The federal law enforcement source told Fox News that Salmon knew of her husband's deadly plans and did nothing to stop them. How do you live with that?
You live in jail because you would be arrested for aiding and abetting. Because seriously, if somebody tells you their plans for a major crime, and I guess unless you just think they're kidding, but she's not testifying that she thought he was kidding.
Yeah,
she just basically, well, it's almost like she just forgot to call the police.
Yeah. Salmon has been widely referred to as Mateen's wife. The only proof of their marriage is her listing as his wife on a mortgage in 2013. The family members said the two were married and had a 3-year-old son. So, unbelievable. KBOI News Time, 8:45. Time to check traffic for the final time this morning. MassMutual Idaho has a new location, but the same robust team of professionals. See them in the Village at Meridian, MassMutual Idaho, led by Paul Hales. 364-0500. That's 364-0500. Here's Ron. It's 8:51. Going to wrap up Orlando in this half hour. The FBI took a computer, a camera, and other equipment from Mateen's two-bedroom condominium in Fort Pierce, 120 miles from the scene of his shooting, an hours-long hostage situation, which culminated in his death. We're talking here, his wife apparently knew what he was going to do, tried to talk him out of it, and when she couldn't, she just said, whatever, apparently. I mean, that's the information we have now. Charges could be filed against her for failing to report this to the authorities. ISIS has taken credit for the attack, lavish praise on Mateen. It's still unclear whether he received direction or simply inspiration from the terrorist group. Fox News reported yesterday Mateen was more than just an acquaintance of another radicalized terrorist who left Florida for Syria, where he blew himself up in 2014. That was American suicide bomber Mona Abdul Saba. Excuse me. Moner Abu Salah. That was pretty close. Drove 16 tons of explosives.
The point is, he's dead.
Yeah, into a Syrian government facility on behalf of Al-Qaeda. Mm. The two frequented the same Fort Pierce mosque. Authorities are also probing Mateen's ties to Dwayne Robertson, a one-time New York gang leader who resurfaced in Orlando as an imam and is suspected by federal authorities of radicalizing Americans and sending them abroad to kill. He was released from prison last year. He says he does not incite violent jihad, although others would say
now,
differently.
It's scary no matter where it happens.
Yep.
But police right now are saying that it appears that Omar scouted out a whole bunch of different locations before deciding, you know, where to kill everybody. And apparently, you know, there were places like Universal Studios and Disney World.
Disney World. That would have been another black guy for Orlando.
Disney World on a typical morning or afternoon in June would have had, you know, thousands of people.
Yep. Not sure what
the... wall-to-wall people.
I'm not sure what the security is like at Disney World.
I would hope it's better, than it was at that bar, but you don't know. I mean, I've never heard of a random shooting happening at any Disney park, but It doesn't mean it hasn't. It just means I haven't heard of it.
Yeah. More information from relatives and people who knew Mateen in prior years continued to bring into focus a portrait of an angry and volatile bigot with conflicted feelings towards gays. His massacre is being treated as both an act of terror and a hate crime directed at the LGBT community. Yet his first wife reportedly believes Mateen himself was a closeted gay man, and we've heard that on several fronts.
Well, apparently self-loathing.
Yeah. And because his dad, who said he wasn't gay, a strong, opinionated, religious man who abhorred gays. Patrons at Pulse, the nightclub where he killed dozens, say he had been seen there many times, and one reportedly said Mateen had contacted him using a dating app, which is popular with the gay community.
I read yesterday they're going to rebuild the club and open it up again, and they said they're going to do so in honor of the people who died. You know, reopen the club because that's what they'd want. It reminds me of a cartoon that I saw one time where these people were going into a store that was like Walmart or something, and it was at Christmas time, and there was a sign on the door that said, "In honor of the birth of our Savior, we will be open all day December 25th.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I understand you're doing something in the name of somebody else, but it just seems like the opposite thing that you would normally do.
Yeah. I can see both sides of reopening the club.
Right.
But dedicating it to a massacre,
well,
which is what you're saying.
Well, the people who were massacred.
Yeah.
Exactly. I don't know. I mean, if you were the owner of the place, would you just rebuild and open it up again? I don't think so.
See, and then there are people who say, well, if you don't, you're letting them win.
Yeah.
Whoever they are, the terrorists, I guess. But on the other hand, I don't know. It would probably become a tourist attraction.
Well, good point.
WOI News Time, 8:56.
A little morbid, though.
Yeah. We're going to come back, tell you what the world's happening with newspapers. They're going out of business. And also, big Medicare fraud sweeps the country.
If you're talking about it,
are you for the criminals or are you for the law-abiding Americans? That's a simple question.
We're talking about it.
If they'll just do what they were voted in to do.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Chris Walton and Paul J. Schneider on the News and Talk of Idaho, 670 KBOI.
Top of the morning, Paul, Jay, and Chris. Latest Pew Research says newspaper declines are accelerating and other sections are healthier. You've noticed a change in the Statesman, right?
Yeah.
It's changed basically from a news-oriented newspaper to an event-oriented newspaper or a predictor of, you know, the big picnic in the park or the parade coming up or this or that.
It previews a lot more things than they actually cover live,
right.
I think.
They have like two news pages, two and three.
Sounded like radio and TV covering live. I mean, they just cover it while it's happening.
13th Annual Pew Research State of the News Media Report documents another year of alarming declines for newspapers, the worst since the 2008-2009 recession.
Mm-hmm.
I've known a lot of newspaper people who've gotten out of the business. Other sectors did much, but some by their own choice, some not. Other sectors did much better, with revenues actually growing. For cable channels, up 10%. Network news up 6% for the evening, 14% in the morning. And they're doing a lot more news in the morning. Mm-hmm. We have the cable stations up here on, and there's a lot more hard news.
Well, yeah,
than we're, used to
we, we've got three monitors, and so right now we've got it on CNN and Fox News and CNBC.
Yeah.
And
we change one of them depending if there's a hurricane or something. We go to the Weather Channel or a sports story.
Or
we go to,
like Wimbledon or the World Cup. We'll watch
exactly.
That.
Exactly. Cobbling together newspaper data that is less current and available than it once was, Pew estimates the industry lost 7% of daily circulation in 2015 and 8% of ad revenues. More up-to-date surveys of readership provide further cause for discouragement. Pew Research in January of this year found nearly everyone is following news of the presidential race, but only 5% said print newspaper coverage in the last week was their most helpful source. 3% for local papers, 2% national, by far the lowest among available channels. A broader study Pew did with the Knight Foundation around the same time found 20% of adults say they often get news from print newspapers. That's still slightly more than the 8% getting news from social media sites. And that kind of surprises me.
Mm-hmm.
I would think maybe social sites first, ahead of newspapers. Newspapers lag behind local TV news, 46%, cable TV news, 31%, network evening news, 30%, news websites, 28%, and radio, right. 25% as a frequent source.
I remember an article. I don't remember what it was in. It was either the Post or the New York Times. And it came out that said a lot of cities that had competing newspapers were going down to just one newspaper with talk of zero.
Yeah.
And that article came out 7 years ago. So right then they were already thinking, okay, within a few years there will be no newspapers.
You think of the cities, Seattle, San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure, but are there still two papers in Los Angeles?
The L.A. Times has the most circulation by far.
There used to be two in Phoenix. Now there's only one.
Yeah.
I think Salt Lake still has two.
There are some independent ones in Los Angeles.
Portland now only with one.
Yeah, there are some independent ones in Los Angeles that I don't usually count.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're not major papers and never have been.
Yeah.
But, like Chicago still has two, right? They still have the Tribune and the Sun-Times?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
New York still has three or four, depending on how you look at it. And the Wall Street News is from New York.
Yeah. Washington has.
Well, Washington has the Post and the Times. And generally, if you lean to the left, you read the Post. And if you lean to the right, you read the Times. And they'll tell you what you want to hear.
Yeah, exactly. Even as it matures, the digital sector is trickier to measure, especially given what co-author and Pew Director of Journalism Research, Amy Mitchell, calls codependence between sectors. While big platform companies hog 65% of digital ad revenues, they depend on traditional news organizations for their content,
mm-hmm.
like Channel 2, Channel 7, Channel 6 all have frequently visited websites for news, as does KBOI, of course.
Right, right.
I was thinking of TV stations. But TV stations depend more and more and more on their websites.
You know, and you hear this on the radio, and you see this on TV as well, where there are a lot of promotional things that just direct you to the Internet.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And they depend on the Internet for latest updates.
Yeah, because they tell you, if you're listening to, or if you're watching our station waiting for the news, but it's still 2 hours to the news, just go to the Internet and see what we're doing on the news.
Exactly, because they're competing with cable news networks
mm-hmm.
who update everything instantaneously. So it's always been tough for newspapers, but newspapers used to do more in-depth reporting.
Oh, yeah.
But now with all this time on cable news networks, they can do in-depth stuff. And the newspapers, they got nothing. So it's an uneasy balance. The report notes the latest census of full-time editorial employment at newspapers, 32,900 jobs at the end of 2014, a 10% decline in a year. And listen to this, Chris, a 40% decrease in 10 years.
Wow.
With further job cuts having taken place, but yet to be counted, newspapers will soon have fewer news employees than local broadcast. That's unbelievable.
It is.
Although I can remember.
Considering how many fewer local broadcast has than they used to.
When I read this story last night, I was trying to think, when I came to Boise to work in television news, and we had a news director and eight reporters the news director at that time did the sports.
Yeah.
Then we had a weatherman, and we had all, I mean, we had like 12, 13 people in a TV newsroom in Boise, which is pretty damn good, I thought. We also did KBOI radio at that time. So amazing. Local broadcasting, 2015, an off year politically. Advertising was down 7%. That's in broadcasters. That was nearly covered by a $1.4 billion growth in retransmission fees cable systems pay stations. It's funny where the money comes from. Cable networks recorded an audience increase of 8% and 10% revenue growth. The network evening audience, far off its peak, seems to be stabilizing. Sunday morning talk show audiences increased. Mobile now accounts for the majority of visits on legacy websites and digital-only sites.
We need to take a break, but when we come back, I'll read you an instant message I've received entitled, Why I Dropped the Statesman.
All right. It's 9:15. KBOI News Time, 9:20. KBOI Rewards Code, newspaper, N-E-W-S-P-A-P-E-R, newspaper. Go to 670KBOI.com. Enter newspaper and earn today's 5,000 rewards points.
I was going to say, for those of you who don't know what a newspaper is, look it up in the dictionary. But for those of you who don't know what a dictionary is, never mind.
Yeah.
This is going to get complicated.
It's a catch 22.
Mike R. of Boise, and by the way, if you don't know what catch 22 is, you can get that at your library as well. Mike R. of Boise says, good point, why I dropped the statesman. Number one, mainly puff pieces, which were mostly advertisements for new businesses. Two, with rare exceptions, limited investigative reporting in a one-party state.
They have no staffs anymore.
Rewriting press releases is not reporting. And three, when going on vacation for a week, no credit for missed papers unless the stop was for 2 weeks. That was the killer. Okay.
You know, I never thought of that.
Logistics and whatnot.
But we stop the paper all the time when we leave town.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought of that. Why do we have to pay for those papers we didn't get?
Oh, good point. When I was a paper boy, you didn't have to pay for the ones you didn't.
Really?
Yeah. Like if somebody said stop the paper for a week, if they just wanted to.
They got a week's credit?
They could either stop it or I could, you know, hold the papers for them at home and then give them to them, you know, all at one time in a paper sack or something.
Hmm.
But if they just flat out stopped it, then. And then restarted it, when I went to collect, I collected for however many days they got.
All right. Continue.
Well, that was it, really.
Oh, that was it? He had
three reasons.
Fluff pieces.
Puff pieces and limited investigative reporting.
And he didn't get money back.
And the funny thing is, he wrote, like, when I was first out of college, I worked for United Press International for a short time. And he says, rewriting press releases is not reporting. And I realized that because a lot of what I did working for UPI, I mean, I was a new guy.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of what I did involved rewriting press releases.
Right.
But also you'd make a phone call and get quotes from people that weren't in the press release and stuff like that. See, I had to do a little bit of reporting, but you did it from a desk with a phone in the basement of the Capitol building.
See, I'm a newspaper lover. The first thing I do when I'm on the road every morning, buy a newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
Every single morning.
Well, and I like them. I like them on vacation too. I mean, I love the Washington Post and the Arizona Republic.
Yeah, I love the Arizona Republic.
They're.
But here's the deal. I need newspapers, you know, to advance Boise State games and do all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I must admit, most of my love for newspapers is for sports. I used to read the newspaper cover to cover.
Mm-hmm.
I don't anymore. I glance at it and try to see if there's something in there that interests me. And, you know, most of the time there is. I like weekend newspapers. I take Friday, Saturday, Sunday at home. And the rest of the time I read the newspapers we get here.
But it's just weird. I mean, you know, some days, especially like down in Twin Falls, too, with the Times News.
Yeah.
You know, once in a while you've got like a 16-page paper.
Yeah.
And that's the entire paper.
Well, you know, pick up the Press Tribune on a Monday.
Yeah.
You know. Throw it up off the ceiling.
But
I mean, it's the way it is.
I mean, that's kind of the way the economy is. You know, same thing happened with record stores.
Oh, yeah. And radio, our staff's so much smaller than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
But our revenue's not down that much.
But record stores, even places that sold CDs, yeah, I mean, yeah. All of a sudden people said, well,
big box stores,
you know, with very little effort, I can just get these off the internet and then I don't even have to store them.
Yeah, that's true. Or you can go to Walmart and get them there.
Right. But it's just kind of what the market will bear. I mean, people.
Blockbuster Video, what happened to them? Same deal.
Newspaper companies can't afford to pay a huge staff of people because they're not getting the revenue, you know, even from advertising.
Let's go to Bob in Napa. Bob, good morning.
Morning, guys. I used to be a subscriber to the Statesman, and I saw on the front page this morning, I saw a prime example of why I dropped it. Boise police officer, guns down, so-and-so.
Yeah.
You know, I think that was an extremely poor choice of words.
I saw that, too, yeah. And I thought it was due to the fact of the guy's actions, the fact he'd been convicted of murder before and you know, it had just been released from jail.
It was just the tenor of it. You know, the guy in Florida, he gunned people down. I'm going to think that police officer,
you know, you're right.
Him not going home.
To say somebody gunned somebody down just automatically assumes that it's the fault of the, you know, the person who shot.
Exactly. And that's exactly the way to take it.
Short of him not going home or one of his fellow officers not going home, I'm going to think probably one of the last things he wanted to do that day was shoot somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I just that and the fact that it got down to the point that there wasn't hardly enough newspaper to line the bottom of a birdcage, I just dropped them.
All right. Thanks, Bob. All right.
Have a good day. Bye.
Yeah, you too. Here are the other headlines. A Boise officer guns down threatening motorist, not the biggest one.
Yeah.
And the other headlines on the front page. In our own backyard, there's Foothills Gold.
If they were serious about that, that would be
a complicated picture of mass murderer. Your grill can make a fine outside oven. Facebook team targets suicide prevention.
And see, that
those
sounds
are the headlines.
That sounds like what you'd a lot more like what you'd read on the front of a magazine.
Yeah, or USA Today. 9:26, we'll be back.
Live from the Sandler Training Studio, this is News Talk 670 KBOI. This is Idaho Talks Live. Today at 10, listen to Rush on 670 KBOI.
All right, we are back. Latest edition of the AARP Bulletin has a story on Medicare fraud. And there's a picture of a doctor named Jacques Roy. Seen here in a booking photograph from February 2012. This one doctor, Chris, $375 million Medicare scam. One guy.
How is that even possible? One person can steal that much.
That's only a fraction of the $60 billion a year.
Well, that part's true.
Where did all the money go? That's what authorities wondered, even after they searched the house, I'm going to call him Wa, of Jacques Wa, inside the physician's lakefront home in the Dallas suburb of Rockwall. Police found a fake Texas driver's license, a Canadian birth certificate, both in the name of Michelle Poland, plus deposit slips from banks in the Cayman Islands and a guide registering yachts there. Also a book called Hide Your Assets and Disappear.
Are you serious?
A step-by-step guide to vanishing without a trace. But they caught him before he made his escape.
How to hide your assets and disappear?
Yeah, nice, huh? From 2000...
Where do they sell a book like that? Well, I guess bookstore.
Probably at the bookstore, yeah.
Or Amazon.
From 2006 to 2011, prosecutors say Waz Business Medistat Group Associates certified over 11,000 Medicare beneficiaries to receive home health care, far more than any other doctor in the country. Now, the scheme involved recruiting thousands of healthy patients and billing for home care they didn't need. It netted $375 million. Dollars. Simple as that.
Were any of those patients in on it, or did he just provide the numbers to the insurance guy? You know,
some were in, some weren't.
Who knows?
Here's how it worked. Prosecutors say Y used home health care companies, which send nurses and aides to care for homebound to lure in patients. Recruiters were sometimes paid $50 a head to canvass neighborhoods and round up residents from a Dallas homeless shelter, bribing them with cash or food in exchange for their Medicare numbers. All they needed were their numbers. The companies then sent patient files to Medistat, where employees in a boiler room rubber-stamped WAS signature certifying the patients for home care. Ra took financial kickbacks from the home health groups, which billed Medicare for services, and he billed Medicare for bogus additional services for the patients they sent his way.
Wow.
The good news is he now faces life imprisonment. So Wa forfeits his several bank and life insurance accounts, his 20-foot sailboat one-trick pony, his Buick. The government has been unable to track most of the taxpayer funds he was paid. Where's the rest of the money? They have no idea.
Well, but
so when and if this guy gets out of prison.
I'd start in the Caribbean.
Yeah. When and if he gets out of prison, he's got it all.
Wow.
Doctor-led scams on the epic scale of WAS are one small part of fraud against Medicare, the federal health program for older people and those with disability. The sheer amount of fraud and abuse in the program, including phantom outpatients, ghost clinics, undelivered services, overbilling, and identity theft by organized crime, is overwhelming. According to the federal government's accountability office, Medicare paid almost $60 billion in bogus payments in 2014, more than any other federal program. $60 billion. Shantanu Agrawal, director of the program Integrity at Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, says this number is not necessarily an accurate reflection of fraud within the program, since it is intended to include improper payments of various sorts. There is no nationally accepted number or even methodology for arriving at a fraud rate.
You know, whether it's all fraud or some of it is just, you know, some of the instances are mistakes. If you misallocate $60 billion,
yeah,
shouldn't you lose your job?
Yes.
Okay.
Many experts.
So everybody at Medicare.
Boom.
Should be replaced.
Nice.
Wow.
Well, you're taking a stand. I like that.
Well, okay.
Maybe. Not everybody. The guys that answer phones. They're probably.
Well, okay. You know. Yeah.
Many experts say, Chris, this will cheer you up.
All right.
That the $60 billion figure likely underestimates the problem.
There again, how do you estimate and be off by billions?
Well, they're saying fraud could account for 30% of the $600 billion a year in program spending. 30% of $600 billion is what? 90? No. 30? I don't know.
Well, 10% of $600 billion is $60 billion, so $180 billion.
Drop in a bucket.
Yeah.
Malcolm Sparrow came up with that, a Harvard professor and healthcare fraud expert. The point here is we don't know, but we should. We shouldn't have to guess. Amazing stuff.
Yeah.
Sparrow says Medicare's payment audit. Yeah, I was going, why don't they audit these people? Known as comprehensive error rate testing, or CERT, provides comfortably low estimates because auditors do not interview patients and doctors or visit clinics to review patient medical charts.
They just look at books.
Just a paper audit.
Right.
Stupid ones are the ones we catch.
Computer now, I would imagine.
If they're not stupid, they don't catch them. Ask Tyler Smith, the Assistant Inspector General for Investigations at HHS, why criminals target Medicare so aggressively. He will echo the famous reply that thief Willie Sutton gave to the question, why do you rob banks?
Why do you rob banks?
Yeah.
Because
that's where the money is.
Exactly.
But expenditures, it could swell to $1.2 trillion over the next 10 years. Smith said this is where the money is. Other reasons, too, says Smith, whose agency is involved in the Y investigation. Criminals can be attracted to healthcare fraud because they believe the risks of detection and lengthy prison terms are low when compared to traditional drug dealing.
If this guy wasn't caught until he had already defrauded the government of $375 million, I would say, yeah, there's a chance you'll get away with it.
Listen to this.
Especially if you're not quite as greedy as that guy.
Listen to this. Someone can steal $1 million, and they might see less time than someone who steals $2 worth of BC powder, Smith says, referring to over-the-counter headache remedies that street dealers often mix with cocaine to boost volume. So the sentence could be smaller. The allure of Medicare fraud has attracted the attention, of course, of organized crime, such as the Armenian-American mobsters. They used a network of fake clinics and identities stolen from thousands of real Medicare beneficiaries to run a $163 million fraud scheme that they were cracked in 2010.
Armenians, huh?
Armenians.
Like the Kardashians.
Yeah.
It might not be them.
From 2013 to 2015, 2,856 cases were brought to trial for Medicare fraud. Sentences included some $10 billion in restitution, but not all of the money will be successfully collected.
Well, yeah, and when you're stealing from the government, you're probably going to get caught eventually, but not nearly as quickly as you would stealing from a private business or a, you know.
Well, and like the good doctor and his $375 million, they don't know where the money is. Yeah, and eventually he'll get out and have all that money.
One would think, or somebody's already using most of it. I'm not sure.
It's 9:45. KBOI News Time is 9:50, talking about Medicare fraud today. I got a couple of phone calls. Let's go to Jim in Boise. Jim, good morning.
Morning. How's it going?
Good.
Yeah, I saw that article in AARP.
Isn't that something?
I was also going to mention the Willie Sutton thing.
Yeah.
And you mentioned auditing. Now, the best auditor is the patient, if and when the patient can determine what was done to them, et cetera. Now, we all know that if somebody else is paying for something, we don't care what it costs. And people don't. Now, a while back, I had an injury on my foot, so I went to the Elks. You know, they did their procedure. So, and being an accountant and an analyst by nature, every bill from the Medicare and the supplemental insurance I went through. Now, the thing is, with today's computerization, on the bill, they didn't even have the procedure in English. It was in computer speak.
Oh, yeah.
Pathetic. But anyway, the patient is the best line of defense, and everybody should try, you know, care what things cost. And if something is not doing to them, if something is not being done to them, verify that it's not being charged.
Yeah, because a lot of these people, as you heard, had their identity stolen. So, but they would, wouldn't they receive a statement of some kind?
Well, I mean, I got statements and, you know.
Yeah, but you're legal, see.
This thing, when these statements, and that's another thing, these statements, that's depressing enough.
Oh, yeah.
These statements came in for months.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I had a procedure done in January.
What's weird is you have the retail price of something, and then you look at the statement, Medicare knocks it off 50%.
Yeah.
So if you're thinking if it's 50% knocked off, why didn't the hospital just give you a 50% discount to begin with?
Yep. Doesn't make sense. Yeah. Convoluted.
Thank you much.
Thanks, Jim. Let's go to Steve in Boise. Steve, good morning.
Well, Jim said something that was very true. If you're not paying for it, nobody cares about the cost.
There's some truth there.
That's why I don't have insurance, because I want to deal direct with my doctor. If he's overcharging me, I want to know. And you remember my comment a few years ago about cutting the government budget in half because of the fraud and waste?
Yeah, see, I was going to do it 10%, and I got all kinds of crap.
Well, you know what? You start high, and then you end up with a settlement.
Yeah.
And that's why I say 50%, because our government is so full of corruptness and fraud and waste that it is pathetic. and we've let it go for so long that 50% would just barely put them back to where it should be, and it's just overwhelming anymore.
You know what most people's solution to this Medicare fraud would be?
Drugs and alcohol.
No.
That's what their solution is, Paul J.
Well, I know.
Realistically,
their solution would be to hire more people, more auditors to catch these people.
That's the government solution.
Oh, I know.
The people's solution is drugs and alcohol, and that's our problem.
Yeah.
Nobody is being real anymore.
Yeah.
It's sad. It's upsetting to Americans.
So when you said those guys should start high, you were right.
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve.
All right. You guys have a great day.
You too.
Thanks.
You know, Steve's one of those guys who doesn't have insurance, doesn't want insurance,
right.
Just wants to negotiate with his doctor.
Yeah.
I kind of do that with my dentist because I don't have dental insurance. I'm going, really? I mean, I have an HSA, mm-hmm. health savings account, and which I pay my dentist out of.
Right.
But
it's not like you're, you know, not paying the dentist.
No, I mean, I pay him immediately. I pay him before I leave because I get 10% off for doing that.
There you go.
And
10% is 10%.
Yeah. So, health care, Medicare fraud.
I wish we'd have had 10% off Claire's braces.
I mean, you know, we're talking, what, $3,500 bucks?
The
that's
nice,
some money right there.
The good part is she, you know, she has nice teeth now.
True. Yeah. I fixed somebody's teeth.
If you're waiting for, like, the rest of the list, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's all there's got to be. Anyway, welfare fraud, $60 billion a year. Some people say that is way low. And what would we come up with? $180 billion.
Mm-hmm.
$180 billion. 30% of all Medicare charges are fraudulent, according to this report.
That's incredible.
30%.
It also seems like poor management, so, you know.
It does.
Somebody should be changing something.
Well, and the problem is when you don't want to step on anybody's feet and you tippy-toe around because of you know, various reasons.
And
you don't ask questions.
Yeah, and plus if you refuse to pay, do people die?
Yes, they do.
So pay up.
Something to think about with Mike Rogers coming up next. Brought to you by Boise Church of Christ, where church is family. Check them out at boisechurch.org.
Now, something to think about with Mike Rogers.
There is a media frenzy to find out the sexual orientation of the Orlando shooter. They interviewed friends of the people at the club who believe he was there before. They've interviewed the former wives and asked the question. They've tracked down a man that claims he met the shooter on a gay hookup site. The reasoning seems to be that this wasn't a terrorist attack. This was a domestic issue. On 9/11, the terrorists attacked something they disagreed with, America's prowess financially. The symbols of that power were the World Trade Center towers in New York City. The symbolism of bringing down those buildings would be a powerful tool to advance the Al-Qaeda political agenda. They killed men, women, and children in the process. The shooting in Orlando was a place the shooter had visited before. He knew the layout. He knew the security. We need to stop talking about the victim's sexual identity and start talking about destroying the organization and ideology that allowed both to happen. Something to think about. I'm Mike Rogers.